Well, hello, old friend.
Darn. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
It's good to see your face and hear the...
Hello to your face.
That theme again. That theme, of course, is one of the great mysteries through the years. As a matter of fact, speaking of the years, just as the beginning right now, November 20th, says our calendar, 10 years ago, this month, on the 20th, Jonathan Schwartz began his first broadcast on NEWFM.
Absolutely. It was 10 years ago. And you were the 18th of December, just a couple weeks later.
Yes.
I mean, it was essentially the same moment.
I think Roscoe had started in October. Allison was here first.
Right.
With the other format, then the very end of October, Roscoe, middle of November, middle of December came along. And I think a lot of people who were not here at the beginning don't really understand that part of it. I mean, as if suddenly one day we all just began, but it really wasn't that way.
I'll tell you, Scotty, and obviously you share these memories with me. Those first couple of years, a couple of us worked 7 days a week,
yes.
5 hours a day, live. We had no taping, and we had about 50 albums, most of them by the Stones and Dylan and the Beatles. This is now 1967. Of course, we had Sgt. Pepper from June of that year. Richie Havens was such a dominant sound at the station. And you and myself and a couple others, we work, of course, Allison, 5 hours a day, 7 days a week live.
And that was for a year, by the way. Almost 1 year, exactly.
Have you had George Duncan in here?
No, I haven't.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think
George Duncan,
on jury duty.
Is he? That's where he belongs.
Yes. He's now the George Duncan. To those of you listening, George was the general manager of the station when the decision was made to move into this form of music, free form, the great experiment, progressive, all the terminologies, and he is now president of the radio division for
all
Metro.
But it's interesting that his whole life has been a kind of perpetual jury duty, kind of judging others and making decisions, however irrational. But one of the decisions he made, really on his own professional behalf, was to take a tremendous cut in salary. He was an enormously successful salesman, was George Duncan, for WNAW AM and FM. This, obviously, was before 1966, when the FCC said, you can't duplicate your programming more than 50% of the time if you have an AM-FM operation. And George decided, okay, I'm a successful salesman, and I'd like to become the general manager of this new entity, as Metro Media decided to make WNAW-FM a new station, just a brand new station. And George decided, okay, I'll become the general manager, and I guess he was making $100,000 a year, wouldn't you think, as a salesman. Went down, I remember seeing his first paycheck going through his desk at night, you know, with the door open, I'd go, and it was $38,000. I mean, that's a good $62,000 decrease in salary. And it was George's leadership at that time, however eccentric it was, that eventually led to the success of this station, and a revolution in radio. There is no question about it. We affected the country. We affected popular music in this country. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes, and I think that the light bulb, of course, had been lit at WOR-FM, and Roscoe and I had both been over there. A number of other people had worked at OR-FM, and then through their national management, the new national programming consultants for that entire chain, including WOR-FM, decided they were going to be uniformly top 40 with a list and so forth. And so not really realizing what a thing was starting to mushroom.
A gold mine.
They started to change the thing, and George said, this has got to work. Let's pick up the football and go for the
touchdown.
Scotty,
the key to it was that in 1966, the FCC said you cannot duplicate your programming any longer more than 50% of the time. Up until that time, it was WNEW, AM and FM, New York. So, what to do at that time? Some people who owned radio stations found a way to circumvent what the FCC said. What they did was to tape a lot of classical music in Cleveland and play it back on tape on their FM. Other people said, okay, what we'll do, and these were the most devious of the lot, we'll tape our AM of a Tuesday and play it back on our FM of a Wednesday. Now, Metro Media, John Kluge, and of course George and other people. John Dale was around at the time. What they decided to do was to start, for better or worse, a station with a voice, a brand new entity. And that's how FM was born. Of course, WBAI had been here and other independent FM stations, but FM wasn't really on the map. But in 1966, because of what the FCC said, and to a large degree what WNAW-FM eventually did, FM became a national reality and a source of music and information that changed the course of radio history and influenced music in this country.
And of course now it's rapid growth, FM, because of stereo and the enhancement of the sound of music, practically static-free and so forth. The advantage now is that a listener, anyone, can find just about any type of music. The audiences in the future will be even more fragmented than they are now. Specialty.
No question.
Jazz, classical music, Latin, our thing, top 40, album stations, middle of the road, everything is there. And of course, it all came about in 66. That's true. It opened up a great field of employment for people, as well as, most important, the enjoyment of a great deal more music and the sound that you can enjoy. Jonathan, it is good to see you again because, well, a number of times we've heard from listeners wondering, inquiring. I'd like to spend this time ahead of us discussing the projects you've been working on, your book and all that, and also like to have you share with your old friends some of the music that you recall, if you do that kind of play the role yourself.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I brought in a few albums. For example, now, this is one of the earliest albums that WNAW-FM played, and it appealed to me because the group called Chrysalis sounded particularly musical to me, and also they had a jazz foundation, and they made one album that I know about. Perhaps there's a second Chrysalis album, but it never came across my desk. And here is one of the songs from the album. This is called I Wonder What Became of the Morning. The group called Chrysalis.
Carrying on in the dawn of her laughter, knowing that nothing goes on ever after.
That's the group called Chrysalis. Isn't that very musical, Scotty?
Yes.
Remember that record?
Yeah, there were a couple of unique sounds that came in. I think probably the major problem with a Chrysalis, with National Gallery, with a lot of those groups, there was no place for them to perform. There were no concerts, no way to make a living.
Absolutely.
Except on the sale of records.
Absolutely.
And without enough people being able to hear their record, we were maybe one of three or four radio stations on the whole East Coast that ever even played the album.
Mm-hmm.
And so the exposure, the ability to get some income from some source to live and exist as a group, mainly the concerts. Now, of course, you can go on a concert tour as well as sell albums.
Well, as you well know, it's 10 years later.
Mm.
And speaking of income, our own WNAW-FM income was nil in those days.
Yes, your we started income, no commercials.
My income and the station's. We had one commercial, and it was for Paragon Cars. And what it was simply a trade-out. Now, what that means is that every show, every hour, all of us read this commercial for Paragon Cars, how you could go out and lease a car. And in return, George Duncan, the general manager of the station, received a free use of an automobile. And that's it. Also Palisades Amusement Park. I don't know what purpose that served, but we read these commercials over and over and over again.
And the first legitimate commercial that we got, without a trade-out with other deals being made, was Pepsi.
Is that so?
Through a friend, yes, through a friend of ours and George's and everybody. And,
uh-huh.
They bought with a blank book. There were no ratings and no audience, ostensibly. But the heat on the street began to move around and people were talking about the station. And eventually, of course, it did take time. But as you know, those 7 days a week live, right? And the check at the end of the week was not so good. It didn't really cover the coffee.
I remember my check. Gross, $175.
That's what it
take
was.
Home, $139.
Mm.
5 hours every day.
FM, of course, was not really recognized by the union or anything else until the changeover, and each subsequent negotiation that came up, the pay scale rose. It's still not at the AM level, so to speak, but it's, you know, it has been most healthy over the 10 years. It has gotten a lot better.
Oh, there's no question, and there is no question that WNEW-FM and its success was greatly instrumental in helping that along.
Jonathan Schwartz has returned this day, and we are talking to Jonathan live. We'll discuss some of his memories of the past and some of the things he has been doing in the interim since his leaving the station. We'll continue with that after we make a little money. Lone Star's new LP, Firing on All Six, is available at Two Guys. Scott Muni here at WNEW-FM in New York at 102.7. All this week, right through Friday at midnight, we are reflecting and remembering, doing concerts and some repeats of interviews and of those concerts and memories and music that we've shared together, and a whole lot more remains. And right now, live in our studio is Jonathan Schwartz, and those of you who were with us at the beginning back in 1967 and on through until quite recently will recall Jonathan Schwartz, first of all, at 10 in the morning, mm-hmm. till 2 in the afternoon. And then when Roscoe went to France, Jonathan moved to the nighttime, 6 to 10. And that thumbnail, for those of you who are not with us at the time, is a little of Jonathan's background. And hopefully, too, since one of the mysteries of your programming, Jonathan, was your open and closing theme, that we're top secret. The information about your open and closing theme, possibly we will get to. And for the first time ever, reveal the sources of your theme music.
So, okay.
Now, you remember the calls. How many calls did you get, do you think?
It seemed to be the most consistent question.
Mm.
What is the name of your theme?
Where can I buy it?
And where can I buy it? Yeah. No question about it. And, you know, I was just thinking, seeing you take a drink there of Fresca, reminds me that the 10 to 2... the 10 to 2 program that I did for all those years, I really didn't get a grip on it until I found that the general manager and the program director, now the program director is an enormously idiosyncratic guy at that time, Nat Ash. Nat and George, they went out to lunch. So what I would do simply would make a vodka and tonic at about 12:05. So the last 2 hours of the show. And of course, these were the days where we had about 11 albums, and it was just Richie Havens. You know, Richie, you know that Albert Brooks record? Richie. Singing High Flying Bird and Maggie's Farm. And the 12 to 2 couple of vodka and tonics kind of helped us through in those days, helped me through, when we only had about those 9 or 10 records to play, and they were replayed. And also, the getting anywhere at 10 o'clock in the morning is not easy. I mean, it really is not easy, Scott. And yet, 7 days a week, 5 hours, for a long period of time, I was there, and you arrived hot on my heels. And it was a very exciting time, and there's no question about it, because I think we all felt we were building something. It wasn't just a business, though indeed it is a business. We somehow felt we were building something. And both you and I, and particularly you, were radio veterans, and we had worked in the industry as professionals. We worked at the business. This was something different.
Yes, it was.
We felt we were building. I know I did, and I know you did.
It was a tremendous challenge.
I didn't know what we were building. I mean, I had a job. I was working. I figured, hey, if I can work for a year at this station, just a year's work, that's terrific. At $175, at least I'll have some income. Of some kind. I was working on a book at the time, and I felt, hey, this is terrific. I have some income. But in the back of my mind was the ever-present thought, we are building. I didn't know what. You didn't know, I didn't know what FM was to become. We were building on behalf of FM. Now, that may seem a little presumptuous, and perhaps it is, because there were other people hard at work, too. Other scientists, in effect, in their radio laboratories. But we were building on behalf of FM, and of course for ourselves.
What were you writing at the time, 1967?
I was finishing what I didn't know was to become a book. I've always been a writer, and I've written literally dozens of short stories, and a lot of them have appeared in national magazines of excellence. And a collection of those stories eventually became a book called Almost Home. And that's what was going on at that time, in 1967 and in 1968. And there was very little money to be had when I sold a story. I once sold a story to Red Book for $1,000. As a matter of fact, two of them. But that was about it. And the small literary magazines, the quarterlies, like the Carlton Miscellany and the Paris Review and the Kenyon, there are about 10 of them, 10 or 11 of them. I've been in about five or six. They pay you $90 and make you feel that you're lucky. So there wasn't a great deal of money to be had for a short story writer at that time. So $175 a week, coming in to hear Richie Havens sing Maggie's Farm didn't seem all that bad, especially if I could have a vodka at 12 o'clock with George and Nat out to lunch, and you coming in so we could exchange whatever insults we had for each other.
And we were, it was 2 to 7 at one time. We were doing the 5 hours.
No, I did 2 to 7 briefly. And then when you joined the station on the 18th of December in 1967, they moved me back. I mean, you were a radio star. I had really been working in Boston. And you were Scott Muni from WMCA and WABC and a powerhouse.
And more recently from ORFM.
And specifically from WOR, but
really
that was a very brief
music.
Period.
Yeah, that was.
Nonetheless, you know, it made its impression.
Yes,
no
that
doubt.
1 year. It was a year, almost a year to the date. And actually, from all I've been able to understand, they had plans to be top 40 in all the time parts except my 6 to 10 in the evening. And they were going to have that be a free form experiment. But of course, I knew from just instincts and experience at other stations, it's very rare that a station changes its personality and its entire structure for one particular given show, and then everyone else is very tightly restricted into a certain amount of records. So I knew what was happening here, and of course made it my business to come over and say hello.
No doubt
about it.
And I feel that your addition to the station solidified what we were trying to do at that time, however experimentally. And when you joined the station on the 18th of December of 1967, I began the 10 to 2 program. You followed me from 2 to 7. Then I did 10 to 3 on Saturdays and Sundays, and so it went. And that was 10 years ago, and here we are reflecting so accurately and so warmly.
The very beginning, that's what it was. And back then, the music was strange.
Well, now, for example, what I tried to discover in the records that came into the station, and I know that both you and myself and others listened at that time because it was possible to do, physically possible, listen to every record that came in, every album. Now it is literally impossible because there are hundreds of albums that are released throughout this country on a weekly basis. But at that time, there were just enough so you could really at least hear what was going on. And I looked for what I felt as a musician, as I am a musician. I looked for something musical. I looked for melody. I looked for some intelligence.